This week's episode of the Berman Hour podcast is brought to you by New Wave Flow State Coffee. And if you're a coffee drinker, an everyday coffee drinker, or maybe just a casual coffee drinker, it's time to change it up and get New Wave's Flow State Coffee flowing through the veins of your body. Here's why. New Wave's Flow State Coffee is coffee that is blended with a little bit of raw cacao and L-theanine, which is an amino acid that naturally reduces your stress and anxiety. And when you drink Flow State Coffee, it sets your brain into an optimum performance mode where you are able to stay focused, you're able to stay sharp, you can get done what you need to get done, and you're not going to have the negative side effects that often come with coffee, like lethargy after the crash, or the jitters or the shakes from too much caffeine. No, all that shit is gone. Try it for yourself. Try it for somebody else. But let me help you get 10% off your first order. Go to noowave.co/berman. Newwave.co/Berman gets you 10% off your first order of Flow State Coffee. This coffee will set you right. Again, newwave.co/Berman. Let's get it. Welcome to this week's episode of the Berman Hour podcast. I am your host, Jeff Berman. A whole hell of a lot better this week than I was last week, thanks in part to a pair of negative COVID tests for myself and for my pregnant wife and everyone in my family. What happened was I was shoveling snow, worked up quite a sweat doing so, and then when I was done, I stayed outside in the frigid air in my sweaty clothes, and I caught a cold. And as my fever was hitting, I found out from someone in my family that somebody else in my family had accidentally come in contact with a COVID-positive person, and the tracing had begun. And so very quickly, it turned into a Berman family freak the fuck out for 4 or 5 days. Say that 5 times fast. Yeesh. But thankfully, we're moving past it. I talk about this in the podcast with Sal Medrano. Sal Ellington, Sal from Rebuilder, Sal from The Biz, Sal from Boston, Massachusetts, where we talk about the music industry. We talk about the struggles of bands our size. We talk about their upcoming show, a live stream show that they're doing, and all of the hurdles that they had to clear to get this done. The show is 3:30 p.m. on January 1st, New Year's Day. So be sure to follow Rebuilder anywhere you find them online, and you'll find ticket links for the show. Funny enough, Sal told me to suck his brown dick about a year and a half ago, which was kind of interesting. Here's the story. You know when you end up with Facebook friends that aren't really your friends, but it's like they're like third party, you know, removed, but you're like, you end up as friends with them anyway. And then they show up in your timeline and you're like, how the fuck do I know this person? Well, Sal posted something about a friend of mine that I thought was dickish. So I called him out on it. And it turned into a little bit of a fight, an online fight that transferred from the comments into the direct messages. And looking back on it, Sal had very good reason to be pissed off at this person. And I had very good reason to stick up for this person. And that's how it played out. And it got a little heated, and Sal told me to suck his brown dick. And I thought, well, that's one way to end a conversation. And that's where it ended. I didn't think much of it. And then last year at Fest, our bass player, Gabe, who's a big dude, very tall, and I'm very short. So I went up to Gabe and tapped him on the shoulder. It's like, you know, I'm like Rey Mysterio tapping Andre the Giant on the fucking shoulder. I'm like, Mr. Gabe, do you want a beer? I'll get you a beer. And he says, no, I'm good. And then he turns around, and standing in front of him, but now behind him, was Sal. And as soon as I saw him, I was like, I think I know who this fucking dude is. And he goes, hey, man, yeah, I'm Sal. I said a bunch of really mean shit to you on the internet, but that's kind of what I do, and I apologize. And I was like, oh, oh, I know who you are. And then we kind of broke it down and we ended up talking about some other stuff and the Bouncing Souls. And we ended up talking about people that we knew. And I thought it was really funny that, like, we're both really short, especially compared to Gabe. It was just like, it had to be comical for anybody watching, you know, from afar. But I just remember looking at Sal and thinking, you know, I honestly don't believe in having enemies, so I'm glad that we squashed this and it's good. And, you know, I hope that we can become friends. And all these months later, I have to say that Sal has become somebody that I turn to more than I thought I would for friendly advice in the band realm of things. And I think that's a credit to him as being a good person and to him as a very knowledgeable person. And I know that I've been able to extend that olive branch to him as well, and we've been able to help each other. And, you know, benefits of Rebuilder and Divided Heaven, or the mistakes of our bands, you know, we've both learned from that, and I think that's pretty cool. And I'm glad that, you know, we obviously didn't come to blows at Fest. Like, I think some people thought that was going to happen. Like, it would have been, you know, two very small people fighting, you know, outside of Lucy's. Like, what the fuck? No, it wouldn't have happened. Anyway, it was a pleasure to have Sal back on the Berman Hour podcast. And again, Rebuilder has a show January 1st. Please check it out. It's going to be awesome. And here is my interview with a person who once told me to suck his dick. And now we're friends. How about that? Let's go. Healthcare provider, and we needed to get a fucking Zoom call with a doctor that's not even our doctor to tell them what we were feeling and to explain the situation to them for them to send an order for a test to a testing site. And on the first attempt to do that, I called the next morning and they were like, this isn't a testing site. We have no idea who you are, and we have no idea why they said they called us, because we're in Lidditz, you're in Lancaster. It's not the same thing. And I was like, what the fuck is going? Oh my God. Is it like that in Boston?
Kind of. It really depends on where you live. You know, because like we're really, you know, our states are really close together. So like New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, like Massachusetts is like easier because there's like, I like through just kind of being like trying to be good about testing like often. You can search like Massachusetts stop the spread sites. And I've like looked on the site, and anything that's a stop the spread site is like a free test. No questions asked. You just drive up. There's one outside like the TJ Maxx corporate parking lot is where I usually went. Mm-hmm. And cause like which we'll get into talking about, but like this live stream thing that we wanted to do, we all had to test negative in order to do this. And so I had to like, I was like, well, I'm going to go to where I regularly get tested. And they're like, the line was like way longer during the holidays that I actually had to like find another testing site. And again, like same thing with you, like the CVS's and like the Walgreens, Rite Aid's, all those, they're, it's like they're weeks on out before you can get a test. Yeah. Or even days. And so I found that in Lawrence, which is like, it's usually like the poorer communities where they have a really bad time like stopping the spread, that's usually where these testing sites are. So I was driving through Lawrence on my way to like one of the jobs I've been doing, and there was a testing site that literally was like a van smaller than the one that I tour with, and like it's like people, like, you know, healthcare workers testing outside of this van. And like I was like, well, I guess I'm doing that. So I waited an hour. I waited like probably like an hour and a half to like get tested. And I mean, it wasn't like terrible, but like my girlfriend lives in Rhode Island. She is like, there's only one place to get tested, and that's Dunkin' Donuts Stadium, similar to like the Dodger Stadium thing. But she's like, you have to make an appointment way in advance to get there, and there's no other testing sites. I think New Hampshire is the same thing. It's harder to find testing sites as well. My brother actually was the one who told me about Pixel Labs, and he's like, oh yeah, pixellabs.com. You just go on and say that you think that you might have a symptom, or say that you like were in contact with somebody, and they overnight you like a FedEx kit that's already ready to get overnighted back to them, and you take it and send it back. And my brother was like, I think I got two of them and I didn't have to pay for them. at all because I said I didn't have health insurance. But if you do have health insurance, you might have to pay for it.
Okay.
But you could also just lie and say you don't and then just get one for free anyway. And so, like, I got one of those kits in the house ready to go if I ever just, like, need to use it right away. But it's crazy how it does change from state to state, you know?
Yeah, it's unfortunate, too, because all of these numbers that we're seeing that are skyrocketing are very scary and very real. And I just get a sense that it's kind of just a tip of the iceberg because for certain places where it's, you know, difficult, certain communities where I kind of felt this a little bit in what I was going through and Sal, understand I'm not comparing my shitty cold to like that of people who are going through COVID.
Sure.
But there were people that I know, you know, in our greater circle that got it and were talking about it openly on Facebook because they wanted to eliminate the stigma around it.
Right.
And so when I started to think about that and should I talk about it on the podcast? Should I not talk about it on the podcast? I started to feel shame as if I had done something wrong.
Right.
You know, as if I my impenetrable force had been penetrated by this virus against my will. And, you know, so I think a lot of people are wrestling with this in different ways and we're fucked. Like we're not
completely.
I don't know. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, not to just kvetch and commiserate about everything, but, you know, to catch up and hear about this show you guys are doing on the first, but also to get your frame of mind as to what we're facing down now, what you think 2021 will look like for the biz and what you and I do. Because I think that you and I think a lot more alike than we don't. Yeah.
Right. For sure. I mean, it's very like, you know, to what you're saying, like, you know, these numbers are like going higher and like, you know, the testing it's like can be very complicated depending on where you live. Like, you know, I'm sure you took all the extra steps to get tested, but like, I don't know. I think someone else maybe would have hit these hurdles and been like, I'm just not going to get tested. This is too complicated, you know? And then, you know, I think that we are unfortunately just playing this like game of like, we have to hurry up with this vaccine so that we can counteract like how fast this is spreading, which seems very dumb. Like, I'm glad we have a vaccine that's in the works and we're trying to produce it in mass numbers so that we can get it to everyone. But like, that is our only like thing we're banking on instead of being like, okay, well, we've already slowed this thing down because we're not fucking going out and doing all this bullshit. This vaccine, we can like, you know, now we can take this and like really kind of like push against this virus. But yeah, I think it's just instead like, you know, we're just hoping like we're like, oh, 2021, hopefully there's enough vaccines and then, you know, we'll be good. But I think we're just chasing it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. That doesn't make me feel better. I don't believe
that. I mean, it doesn't. It shouldn't. I don't know what that looks like in terms of like, you know, in terms of what we do, because like I'm already seeing, you know, and it's a weird thing to like think this way. And I don't know if I'm right. I don't know if I'm wrong. And I'm just kind of like, well, fuck. It's like I see bands that like are about our level, like announcing tours in like Europe already. Like in UK tours, you know, like Germany tours for like June or like even April. And I see that and I'm like, okay, what is going on here? Like, is this like what one, is it just that much safer over there that it's totally fine? It may be, I don't know. I don't live there. So I don't, you know, it's nothing. I don't follow the numbers there as often, but it seems very quick that like someone would be just kind of wanting to like go tour immediately out there. And I'm like, or is this just kind of like agents and promoters being trying to be really hopeful and being like, well, we'll book it and hope for the best. And if it doesn't work out, we'll just keep pushing it like we have been. Or is this like a real thing that everyone's just like, yeah, we're good over here. We're fine. It seems to me, it seems irresponsible to try to book something like that for like,
and just a waste of time.
It seems like a waste of time on so many parts. You know, it seems like a waste of time for the band to try to organize it and the promoters and everything. It just, I don't know. I think I would want to wait until it's like green light. We're good. You know, like venues are open. Like, are you going over there? And like, is it still going to be restrictions where like there's no standing up and everyone's in like tables away from each other?
Yes or no?
Sure.
Do you think it's irresponsible that bands are announcing tour dates for 2021? Irresponsible is the wrong word. How about this?
It can't be summed up in a yes or no.
That you
like, it really depends. Like, you know, is it just like if a band is like September 2021, we're announcing a tour, and they announce it. I don't know if it's irresponsible. It may seem silly, you know, it may seem like, oh, you're very hopeful, but they're not putting anyone in harm's way or anything because it's just like an announcement. It's just like this thing. Sure. If a band announces something for like, let's say they say like February 2021, and it seems like something that's actually going to go through. Yeah. You're being completely irresponsible. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. I think that because I'm a political person, I really wanted certain bands, and you and I have talked about this privately. Yeah. We won't mention any names.
We can mention them.
I don't want DMX breaking down my door. I feel like that's a common theme in every episode. Oh my gosh. I'll just be like, look, I bought their records. Okay. They have my money already.
I mean, that's what they'll want. They'll just want to pay off.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I bought the records for 20 years. Am I not allowed to criticize? But I think that because of everything that happened this year and as turbulent of a political year and a socially political turbulent year that it was, that I expected and wanted artists to take a stand about that. And some did and some didn't. And I was surprised as much as I was disappointed in who kind of had the balls to step up when they needed to. When I think about that in the context of this COVID and for not inherently being more cautious with how they're rolling out tour dates, because at this, on one hand, it's harmless that they're just posting a tour flyer or a tour poster, right? But on the other hand, I'm thinking, you know, it's none of to coincide with you touring these posting these fucking tour dates. Are you all, we all know people now who have died. That's like I have trouble making a disconnect from that. It's like if all you're doing as a band is just talking about the good side of things and talking about future plans and future tour dates, but you're not addressing what's happening in the now, then it just makes me feel like you're aloof and you're unaware. And at that point, the tour dates become harmful because you're more interested in putting off the reality of what people are facing.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, for sure.
In favor of what's going to happen at some golden age in the future.
Yeah. And
like, to me, that's the same as fucking MAGA. I know I'm not claiming those bands to be that, but it's the same like false ideology of like, well, it'll always get better if we do this. Well, you got to do the work now. So let's, you have, you know, 250,000 followers on Instagram. How about we have a discussion about how this, unfortunately, there are artists that.
Yeah. There's like, you know, these artists, like it's become this job, this business that they have. And for them, they're like, well, you know, you have managers, you have agents and all those people that, you know, are probably being like, well, you know, if we announce this tour or we sign on for this tour, like we can still get our deposit. We can still get our like guarantees, which, you know, we'll get the agents and managers and everyone paid. And they're like, if it doesn't happen, it's fine. They'll keep getting postponed, but we'll still have our deposit down. Which to me is just like so fucking stupid. Like, are you really like that desperate for your fucking deposit? Like, come on.
Well, that's as good a transition as I could ever have wished to have written, because I didn't intend on having this podcast start with you about a bitching session about shitty people and their shitty responses.
I'm glad that we did.
Yeah. The thing that I like about you though is that you, besides the fact that it almost made us, you know, bitter enemies for eternity, I do like the fact that you, excuse me, you spit fire and you're very quick to say what you think, and especially when you think that it's on in the best interest of the greater community. Like, you don't do it from a selfish place. You do it from a place where you want to see all ships rise. And that's apparent if anybody who's listened to Cast the Biz or they've seen the Instagram videos. The TikTok videos are a different thing. Maybe they're not as helpful. We'll talk about that in a second. But I'm curious, the idea for the biz emanated from your desire to teach people live entertainment industry etiquette, perhaps? You're, like, where did it come from?
I think you're giving me a little bit too much credit. I mean, you're completely right. Like, I mean, a lot of the stuff, like, I always just want everyone to have a shot, you know, and this industry is so unfair with, like, who gets a shot that, like, it's always made me mad ever since I was, like, in high school, and I always wanted to do something about it and, like, work hard to, like, show people that there's other music out there, there's other people out there, and doing that in the biz and, like, just kind of, like, showing my experiences, I feel like can help people, other artists a lot. But where kind of the idea came from is that there's this person in the music scene who plays in the ska band who we don't exactly get along. And I worked for this band for a little bit, and I love the band. I think everyone in the band is great except for this person. And I found out that this person is, like, a music business teacher. And I was like, I don't understand how this person is a music business teacher, because they literally don't know anything about really being in a band. Like, I think that they've gotten to where they have by other people's help and not acknowledging it. So with that, I remember, like, the day that, like, I found out that this person was teaching at, like, a college, I was like, you know what? If they can be a music business teacher, I can be a music business teacher. I'm just going to I'm just going to start teaching music business on my Instagram. And I remember making, like, the first video with Daniel. I think I was bitching with Daniel, and I was like, we're gonna make one right now. On the way back to the car, we had just had lunch. I was like, we're gonna make one right now. Let's talk about how, like, you know, the dumb shit that bands ask you at the venue that when they're coming in, how they you know, they always expect that you would even have a backline and shit. And he was like, oh, great, let's do that. And so we just did it. Yeah. And it was funny. And, you know, it is informative too, because it's, like, it's true, but at the same time, I thought it was pretty funny to do. So then I kind of, like, people were like, this biz thing is really funny. And it's, you know, I started getting messages from, like, kind of just, like, fans of the band who were like, oh, I didn't realize that this, like, actually happens. And I was like, yeah, this is, like, a real thing that happens. And they're like, that's crazy. This is, like, so good to know. And so I just kind of,
it's not just a meme.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not just an internet joke. It's the shit that really occurs.
It really is. So I just kept doing it that way. And, you know, obviously during COVID, like, I had, like, you know, I stopped for, like, a little bit just because, like, I didn't really want to post anything for a little bit. And then I started just kind of doing, like, longer format interviews while we're not having shows. And it was actually Kristen Bixby who said to me, she was like, I miss, like, your short little funny things. I was like, yeah, but I did those at shows and venues when, like, I could make them. I was like, I can't make short, funny, like, questions when I'm not interacting with artists right now. Like, you know, I was like, I'm booking people to, like, have longer conversations because it's, like, my only thing I can do right now. And she's like, well, I just don't want to see that go away. I was like, no, it won't. You'll get both.
Yeah, I kind of have a meta follow-up question to that, because when I first started doing the Berman Hour, it was an Instagram live thing, and I messaged you and I said, I'm not stepping on your toes. Like, I'm not trying to do I fancied myself as like David Letterman, but Jewish.
I feel like, you know. Yeah, in that context, like, you know, people are coming on your, like, show, like, oh, this is very respectful, and I get to, like, talk serious, and my show is like the Eric Andre show, where people are just like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, yeah. But, and I wanted to have politicians and journalists and mommy blogger. You know, yeah. I wanted stuff outside of the music, so it wasn't always inside baseball.
Right.
But I inherently, I kind of just almost like inherited this challenge of trying to keep the content at a particular level to my satisfaction while doing it on Instagram Live, which is why I transitioned into a traditional podcast as we are doing right at the moment. Have you had similar issues where you kind of go back and forth between having it be video, having it be more of a traditional podcast? I find that I can't sit through your videos, not because I don't like them, but just because of the nature of the app that it's on.
Right.
Whereas I can listen to them on Spotify as I'm listening to everything else, and it's that much more seamless. What has your experience been in that regard?
I mean, it's completely true. I mean, like, that's the thing is that with these long, with the longer format videos that interviews that I'm doing, some of these interviews are like hitting like 45 minutes. I don't think I've ever watched anything on Instagram that's been longer than like 10. So
yeah,
you know, and I saw that, like, I was looking and I was like, yeah, no one's watching these full episodes on Instagram, which is why I always uploaded it to YouTube as well, because I was like, yeah, I think YouTube is a place where you might end up watching a longer video. But I don't get as many, I don't get as much attention on YouTube because I don't really like push it that often. I just kind of like push it out to just like whatever those channels are. And I started doing the podcast aspect of it just because I realized that. And I was like, well, I want people to listen to the whole thing. If I send it over to Spotify or just like the audio world, then I think people will listen to the whole thing. And I would find that like the numbers aren't nearly as high, but they're listening to the whole thing. And it seems to grow with like every episode, which is good. And that's kind of one of those things where it's like, I don't really know. I don't want to stay just audio. Like, I think if I did, if I did ones that were just audio, it would be fine. But I think people like seeing some of the video aspect of it. And what I end up doing now is like, even though I know people aren't watching the whole video on Instagram, there's like these little small clippets that I can kind of take that were like funny moments in it, and then just like kind of put it in as a story or my page, and then be like, check out, you know, this episode of The Biz either on Instagram or like my podcast. And it kind of just gives me more content to kind of roll with, to like, people like seeing something visual. So that way, even though they're not going to watch the whole entire thing, if they see a small clip, maybe I'll just remind them to check out the podcast later. But it adds a more aspect to it, because then I got to sync the audio to the video, and that sucks.
And it says happy holidays or whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah, like, how did you come about branding yourself in that uber sexual dancing way?
So those are two different things. The selfies, as we call them. As
the selfies.
Selfies, yeah. Were coined by Dickie Bear of the Boston's. And that happened because it was just years and years ago when Rebuilder was on tour. Snapchat had just kind of come out, and I didn't have it, but everyone in the band had it. And they're like, you're missing out on jokes and stuff because we can't send you a snap. And I was like, oh, I'll download it. So I downloaded it. I remember I like went to the bathroom. I was like, some cafe we're in. And this cafe like had a ginormous tree in the bathroom, and just the whole entire wall was a mirror. And I was like, oh, this is a perfect opportunity to just like do my first snap. I'm going to strip down and just get behind this tree and then snap a picture. And then when I came back to the table, I sent it to everyone as I sat down. Everyone at the table was horrified and disgusted, which I thought was hilarious. And I was like, this is so funny. So then I just kind of kept like, we hit a rest stop. I did it at the rest stop and sent it to everyone. I was like, this can't be the thing that you do now all tour. And the second that you say that, it's like, all right, well, now it is, you know? So I did it for the tour, and it was, you know, I thought it was pretty funny. The girl I was dating at the time, she was like, how's the tour? And I was like, it's great. And I sent her that picture, and she was very upset. She was very upset and was like, don't fucking send this to anyone. Like, this is like so like embarrassing. Note to self, don't send these to your girlfriend. And so then like it was months later, like at the Throwdown with the Boston's, our tour manager was like, how's Rebuilder doing? I was like, great. just took some pictures on tour, and I sent him one of those pictures because I thought it was funny. And he laughed and thought it was funny, but he sent it to the whole entire band in like the group chat. And now like all of the Boston's had it, and they were like, what the fuck, dude? Like, please. And like Dickie Barrett was like, please don't take any selfies this weekend. But he thought it was funny, and he was like, you got to make a calendar of this and all this whole thing. And, you know, these weren't public yet, but like people, like it started getting around because friends were sharing them, and people started coming up to her. And so then after that, I was out. I remember I was out having dinner with my girlfriend. My friend Clay showed up, who worked with us in the Boston's, and he came up to the table. He met my girlfriend at the time and was like, you must be so proud of the selfies. And I just saw her face just drop. And like, she like kind of was just like, yep, they're great. And then like, he left, and she like just unloaded into me and was like, how do people know about this? And I was like, I don't know. They're like sharing pictures. Like, they think it's funny. And we broke up shortly after that. Not because of that, but that didn't help at all either. And when we did, I was just like, well, I could never post these online before. Fuck it. Like, I don't care now. Like, you know, I think they're funny, and I'm just going to post them. So I did post on Instagram, and it was just like, people were horrified. People thought it was funny. There were so many different reactions to it. And people just kept asking me to do more of them. They're like, when are you doing more? And I was like, I didn't know I was supposed to do more. I thought it was just this one-time thing. And so I kept finding just different scenarios to be in. Like, it had to be creative for me. That's what it was. Like, you know, I remember like one of the ones where like I was on the Dropkick truck that just had all the merch and all the gear for St. Patty's Day. And I'm like going back into like restock t-shirts and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I see that the fucking piano is there. That says Dropkick just like against the wall. And I was like, well, this is fucking classic. So I get up on the piano and like, you know, fucking take a picture of like one of the fucking like beanies like covering me up, and like took a picture, and of course like sent it over to like Ken Casey and stuff. And like, they were like, oh, what the fuck, dude, you know? But like, it was like, it was always finding these like different aspects of it. And that's kind of why like it's like, it definitely slowed down for a while, because it was like, I don't know what else to fucking do, you know? Like, I've already like taken so many different pictures and stuff. But because they became really funny, and because people wanted to see them, like, I did them. And I will tell you that like, it became this amazing thing, because I've always been a really shy person and not very outgoing. And I kind of like, when I started doing that, stopped caring a lot and just being like, I just don't care. Like, I'm just gonna, I just, if I think it's funny, I just fuck it. I don't care anymore. And people would always be like, man, you have some confidence I've never seen. And I was like, I really don't. But like, I think I kind of now do more like have confidence in myself, yeah, just because I don't care that much. Like, it's kind of when you start opening these doors and these like small rooms that you're in, you just kind of like, you're like, oh, well, that wasn't that bad. And you just kind of keep going with that, where it's kind of like things don't become as scary anymore. So me doing this dumb internet naked thing became a thing where I'm just like, oh, this is fun. And I don't care that it's like it's just my fucking naked body on the internet. So of course I put it on Christmas cards, because I was like, I never, and it looked really good. But the dancing kind of went hand in hand with that, because like TikTok is really
like proper,
are trying to be like a family friendly type app. So you can't like strip down on that app, at least if you're a guy. So like, I remember I tried to make one where I was just like in my boxers, like dancing or something. And it like immediately just got taken down. Like, it didn't go out to anyone. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll just put on these velour outfits and learn some TikTok dances, which I was very bad at. But, and it took me a lot longer to learn them. And it was just something to do while I was bored during quarantine. So it was like March, April, I just started like diving into this. And I started all of a sudden getting a lot of views, and I was like, this 100 to 1,000 views. And then all of a sudden, this whole thing takes a weird fucking twist.
Yeah.
So I'm doing all these dancing videos. People are engaging with them. They think it's funny. It's funny because it's like, I don't know. It's, you know, Instagram, Facebook. Like, everyone knows me from, like, what I do working in the music business and my band and stuff like that. All of a sudden, I'm in this world where nobody knows who I am at all. They don't know me from anything. You know, like, none of these people on this know what I do in any capacity at all. So they're just like, there's this fucking... I don't have the notifications on TikTok. So I just, like, when I open up the app, I would see if there was any engagement and be surprised. So I just was like, oh, more people are watching this. One day I open it, there is thousands of, like, new follows. And, like, something has happened. And I'm like, something has happened. And I go into a notification. And there is a user, and his name is Slowcrow, and it's seen a video in the corner who he's like, he's got like a big American flag behind him. He looks very like Southern, and he's like, all right, y'all, I don't know who this kid is, but he's funny as hell. Let's blow him up, go over and follow him. So all his followers started following me. And so I'm looking at the follower list. I'm like, holy shit, I just got a lot of follows. But all of them are like Blue Lives Matter like icons and like very right wing like icons all over the place, like MAGA and Trump. And I'm like, I just acquired thousands of right wing followers to my page from this man.
What do you do with that? Like, what do you do with that then?
Dude, I kept making videos like, cause I was like, well, I don't really get political on here. I'm just dancing. So who cares? But I was like, why do they want to see this brown man dance? Like, this should be the last thing that they want, but they're laughing at it. You know, they're engaging. What would happen was when I would go live on it. Cause like after you hit 1,000 followers, you can go live. And so I would go live and I would wear the suit and, you know, people would come into the room, and my immediate thing to do to like try to start conversations was I would ask everyone where they're from, because anytime they tell me any place they are from, I have a story about being like, okay, and keep watching. And then like,
did any of that engagement ever trickle over to Rebuilder stuff?
Never. If anything, like I first trickled over because like, it's funny, if I ever posted on TikTok about my band or anything doing band-wise, it wouldn't go out to anybody. I would see it. It would be like, 20 people saw this, you know, and you can see that it didn't make the algorithm to be pushed out. It wasn't interesting enough. But if I put on a fucking suit and danced to like a popular song at the time, hit thousands and thousands of people. So
that is so fucking weird. I mean, is there a part of you that just looks at that in the stats and just thinks, fuck, like, why is, of all things, this the thing that really hits?
No, because, you know, I mean, I think I already had that conversation when I was like 14. I was like, why aren't ones are, you know, like, it's just the same thing. You know, it's like,
yeah,
you know, I understand. I didn't know if it would trickle over to the band, and it didn't. I stopped posting because like when the George Floyd murder happened, I was like, I can't fucking be dancing to anything. I'm not even the right mindset to even do that anymore. So I stopped. I haven't posted since May to like probably last week. I posted again, and I think I just like pushed out the promo for the live stream show that we were doing. And some followers that I had were like, "Oh, I'm glad you're back. This is cool. I'll check this out. I'll buy a ticket." And then I think we sold like a couple of tickets more for it to like some people I didn't know, which might be them. So they might be one of the right wing followers. I don't know. But I think maybe a lot of those people dropped off, because I did at one point was like, oh, I haven't been posting because like I'm not in the right mindset to like put on a velour suit and dance. But I have these t-shirts that say defend POC punk, and they're going to Black Lives Matter. So you can buy them here. And I think that at that point, I think I got some messages from people who were being like, are you saying that fucking blue lives don't matter and all that shit?
Jesus Christ.
And then, you know, I think I was just like very Trump supportive at that time. Probably didn't watch anymore.
Man, that world is so fucking, I mean, that story is crazy, but that world is so fucking weird to me.
It's, isn't it weird that they're on TikTok? Like, why would you be there? That's like a child's app.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, do you stop yourself ever and just realize, like, oh, I am a voyeur. Like, I when I was a kid, I thought people like me would be totally creepy. And now here I am looking at Instagram stories of people that I barely know as I'm like taking a shit and like, you know, watching them like bake a casserole or something. And I spook myself. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? Like,
I mean, I
could be reading War and Peace right now. I could be doing anything else of value. And I'm wasting my time looking at people's stupid fucking.
All entertainment though. It's one of those things. I think I've just dove in, like, you know, I know there's a lot of people that like to like turn off and disconnect from all that stuff. And it is, I mean, it's helpful too. I mean, like, you know, as much as I spend on social media, watching things and engaging in that stuff, to me, the stuff that I really enjoy doing is like playing music. So the go and practice place and play drums and do all that means that I still enjoy the real world. You know, I think if I stop doing those like analog things, if you will, I think I would be like, oh, like this has completely taken over everything, you know?
Yeah. And that's a good segue because Rebuilder has a show on the 1st. So we're recording this on Sunday. It's in 6 days and it's at 3:30 PM. You guys are doing it through Noon Chorus, which is a really cool site that's been doing stuff. How did this idea come about? Into it, I have enjoyed the content that you've put out where you have been ripping other bands apart for doing this sort of thing.
I have been.
I'm polite as your friend. I'm politely holding your feet to the fire as to kind of the idea behind doing this, the idea behind doing it in 2021, technically speaking. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what did you see and learn from this vast array of 9 months?
You know, for anything I learned, it's like I knew to do this. The idea came about because, like, obviously, I've been ripping bands on the internet and stuff for doing live shows. And me and Daniel have been at the practice space, and every time we fucking see one of these things go up, we like, it's more when like people are just doing like. One of the things I have here called the Midway that's in Jamaica Plain, and they like having shows, like they do bands on stage and there's like a plexiglass in front of them. I think maybe like 5 to 10 people can come to the show and watch at fucking 7 p.m. And it comes up in my feed and I can see there's 5 or 4 people watching this. And I'm like, wow, was that fucking worth it? You're not no way you're getting any money for doing that. I guarantee on stage don't like live together or like, you know, are in the same bubble. And
yeah, it's just increased risk all
increased
around.
Increased risk for what? For nothing. Yeah. For nothing. So that you can get on stage and just play with your buds and be like, we played a show to what? To the 5 people? Like, I'm like, before Corona, you couldn't fucking draw. And now these people don't even have to leave their house and you can't even draw. No one wants to see you, you know, like what the fuck are we doing here? So with all that stuff, like, you know, me and Daniel were like, we're not going to do any more of these like live streams from our bedroom. I mean, we didn't do many. I think we did like 2 or 3 and it was always just to push like a new product that we had out just to kind of be like, oh, this is a promo for that. And they weren't great. They sounded not great. And they looked probably decent at best, and
as good as they could have.
Yeah, as good as they can. And it was just like, okay, I was like, if we do another one, it needs to be like a full band. We have to do something where it's like, you know, it's quality, like it looks good, it sounds good, and it's like worth someone paying some money for, because just putting the iPhone up in the room and playing is boring for everybody. It didn't end up actually working out with them. And then I was talking to Jay Moss, who's recorded all of our stuff. And he was like, I would like to be involved in that. I would engineer that. And I kind of went to him. I was like, all right, man. I was like, I don't think we can find a team or a place, a thing in place to do this. But is this something that we can just do together? Like, can J Moss Industries and Rebuilder be able to put this thing together? And he's like, oh, I think so, absolutely. So then it was, you know, Daniel was like, maybe that's how we do our New Year show this year. Maybe if we can pull this off, we can do a New Year show. Like, what is the lineup? And before we even got to that of like practicing songs, we need to like find like how to do this safely, because again, I don't want to act like all these other bands who are just like, we're just gonna fucking do this, you know. So I asked venues, couldn't find any venues that would even open the door for us to do it, even ones that we worked at, because they were just like, yeah, we like we first so too. So I
yeah, at this point
I was like, okay, if we go to pre-recording, then like, what do we actually need? And does that change where we can do this? And Jay Moss was like, ooh, if we can do it without a PA system, it would help him a lot to like make the audio really good. So we'd have to get in-ears and get an in-ear system. I don't have a whole in-ear system for a whole entire band, but right. Austones do. And we keep all their gear where all the merch is made in like Pembroke, like about 40 minutes from me. And I asked them, I was like, you know, can I borrow this stuff since you're not using it right now? And they're like, yeah, totally. Just like, you know, don't break anything. So I was like, okay, well, now we have in-ear systems. We need a venue. And it was getting down to the wire of like when we could actually even do this. And I couldn't find a venue. And then I remembered that like the first band I ever worked for was this band Kicked in the Head. And we recorded in their barn, my old band, the years and years ago. And mm-hmm. I was like, do you still have the barn? And he's like, yeah. He's like, it's not a recording studio anymore. I just practiced drums in there, but we still have it. I remember it being very big. So I went and took a look at it. It's like, this is great. It was completely free. So I was like, okay, there's no venue cost. We can do this here. And then Jay was like, you should get my friend Bill to film it. Bill is a Rebuilder fan. Him and his wife come out to many shows, but he has tons and tons of video gear. He'll do a really good job filming this. And then the guy who, Kyle, who edits all of J Moss's videos, who's in California, is like, he'll probably do the edit for it. And I was like, okay, so this can be our team. And then Brittany can come take photos. So it was like, okay, I now have a crew and band is 9 people total. And right. We wanted to keep this thing less than 10, and everyone was on board. I invited Brandon and like have many practices to just kind of get up to speed on that.
You know, in a manner of weeks, months. I mean, at what point did you guys decide that you wanted to do this?
The idea came about in like about September together, and then like, it was just kind of like some weeks of like finding each piece to put together. The practices didn't come about until probably only like 3 weeks before we actually were able to do it. And it was like, okay, these are the practice dates in advance. Everyone needs to test. We have to have negative tests to be able to do this. And then the day of the shoot, everyone has to also have negative tests. So like everyone who's going to maybe a bigger band that would have a budget to do something with. And it was a lot of learning. Today, it was like, it was so much work to do just this like small 35 minute set, you know, like we didn't play for 2 hours. Mm-hmm. It was so much work. Like we played the set and like, I hadn't felt like kind of like just put everything into, and I haven't been able to do that in almost a year, you know? So being able to do it this one time, it was like, holy shit, like this felt really cool to do. And at the same time, I was like, isn't this so stupid? Like so much fucking work and so much money just to do this 35 minute set. We didn't put anyone in danger really, because like we all test and we all do things. I mean, there's a little, you take a little bit of risk with everything you do, but we are trying to do this in the most safest way it's possible. And I'm like, man, I think this way for this set that we just did with all this work and all this money, and then I see some fucking dickhead band just being like, we're playing a show next week, like, you know, and you can come in person if you want. And I'm like, you gotta be fucking kidding me. Like, yeah, this is what gets me so upset, you know, is like that, because that is what I will rip apart. Where what we did, if anyone wanted to, I mean, they can try, but like, we took a lot of precautions to just try to do just this 35 minute set. You know, it's so crazy that is how much work has been put in, band members included. Everyone's going to tune in, but I don't see anyone at our level doing something like this. And I completely understand why now, because the amount of time, the amount of money, and like the amount of precautions that you have to put in when you're not even sure how much you'll make in the end of this is a lot.
And there's a lot of art and finesse and experience and technical savvy that goes into making these look and sound good. Because as you know, it was pretty soon into this pandemic that people grew tired of shitty live streams. People grew tired of the living skyrocketing. And I think, man, I can't back that. So I'm relieved. I wouldn't have put it past you otherwise, but I'm very relieved to hear that you and your bandmates took this as seriously as you did, because that has got to weigh heavy on you too, beyond the financial risk of everything and the technical bullshit that you just have to get through. Just the weight of people getting sick from being around each other makes it that much more difficult.
Yeah. I mean, right? When we started doing this, the governor drew back like how far we've like in our phases, like what can be open and capacities. Right. It was already pulled back down, and we're like, oh man, we're going into this right when like things are getting really bad again, you know? And I think I was texting everyone every couple of days, like, remember the test. It was after Thanksgiving. I was like, you know, the lines are getting really, really long. So like, make sure that you guys leave enough time to actually get this done, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you see that like on movie sets and like things like that, like, you know, even some airports, you can get a rapid test before you are doing your thing, you know? And
there's a lot of false negatives associated with that.
There is. There definitely
is. I fell into a rabbit hole reading up on all that shit when I thought I had it.
Yeah.
And I was looking into a rapid test, and I was able to find someone who could score me one. I felt like I was buying drugs or something. And they talked me out of it. They were like, no, like, pregnant wife, don't risk it. Just assume that you have it until you get the results back from a real test.
Because
you know, you don't want the elation.
I think we'll be good. And I think we did. And it's one of those things that I think it just showed me that, like, man, if you're a band of our size, you want to do this, you can do it safely. There's a lot that's going to go involved in it. I don't know if it's even going to be worth it for you to do it. You're going to have to take all these factors into account of, is this worth doing? And if it is, it's going to be a lot of work on you to do this, because I think this is the safest way for us to do it.
And I think it's a good selling point too, honestly. You know, if I didn't know your band, if I didn't know you personally, but I knew your band, but I had been keenly aware of any artists that we know and artists that we don't know who just, well, let's go here and play, or let's go to the whatever. You know, hearing you talk about the stress, it sounded like the stress of getting everybody in your fucking band to agree to take a test and to make sure that they did it. Anybody who's ever been in a band and been in that band leader capacity knows how much of a pain in the ass getting your bandmates to do anything is.
Oh, dude. It's
let alone getting them tested and providing their results and staying on top of them, you know.
Even that, and then even just being like, you know, like learning songs. Because like, for the songs that Brandon didn't play drums on, he jumped on guitar. So we have three guitars for some songs, because Brandon's a very good guitar player and he can sing really well too. So we're like, cool, we can do three-part harmonies. And we can do like another guitar as well to do a different voicing. This will all be awesome. Well, this is all awesome if we figure out what the fuck is being played.
Right.
But we don't have a lot of time to practice. It's like, you know, like it's so much easier. Like, I can't stress enough how much easier it is when you're in a big band that this is your job and you're like, okay, cool. Our schedule is Monday through Friday, we're just going to work on this. We're going to get here at fucking, let's say we start working from noon to four. We'll just work on this every day for a week, and then we'll film on Saturday. Cool. You don't have anything else going on, you know, right. like, of course, you know, but like
it's your job, it's your primary job at that point,
your primary job. And you are in a position where you are really lucky to have hit the lottery of life where that is your job. But when it's not your job, I mean, like, we're all still trying to find ways to make rent. So we're still working and doing other things. I can't tell this dude, be like, well, we really need you to show up to practice on
this
Saturday,
has gone a little long.
So don't go to
but
work.
That's you know? I guess the only other thing I want to ask you is kind of an outlook. Like, what do you think in the biz, not inherently your necessarily your podcast,
just the music business in general,
business. Yeah. What do you think it looks like?
I honestly think we're going to see a lot more for like late in the year. I think, I think a lot of more tour announcements are going to be, yeah, I think we'll be good by then. And I think it's going to be a lot of scrambling to see if like that happen depends out. And I think there's going to be I don't think it's going to be as fast as people think. I think that we're doing a good job as quickly as we can, but all of this is still very new. So we just don't know. So I think we're all just learning as we come by. And I think that unfortunately the industry wants to fucking move as fast as possible because they need to move on to whoever the next new thing is so they can make money off of that. So they're just going to like try to announce tours left and right. And I think by the end of the year, I think late next year, we'll start seeing shows happen in a safe capacity where like me and you would probably feel safe going to a show. But I don't think it's going to be right away next year. I think you're going to be looking at like 2022 as like we can get back to a full touring cycle. Because even in 2021, let's say you have some places that are safe, you'll start seeing touring look a bit different in terms of schedule wise. You might have a lot more of the weekend warrior thing where like, well, we can, you know, it is safe for us to go play in these states because their numbers are like nothing anymore. And we can go do that, but we can't go to these other places. So, you know.
Yeah, I think that it's, my prediction is that it's going to be good and safe for the big ends and not for the small ends. I think that, you know, McCartney in a stadium or Green Day in a stadium where it's kind of akin to how the NFL is doing their seating now.
Right.
I think those sorts of opportunities are going to present themselves. I think for bands like ours,
we'll be the last ones.
There's going to be opportunities there, but it's going to be for less money than before and with risk.
Less money than before, and we're not going to be able to open for the big ones. Because the big ones are going to be like, well, we can't because we're not making as much money as we did before. So we don't want to even pay out the $100 for an opener. And let's say your opener is a four-piece. That's four more people they're bringing in backstage. They're like, we don't want that. We need to spread out more. So no more opening bands for these tours. Like, it's straight up. It's the headliner and that's it, you know, or an acoustic opener is that's it. Like, and I think you'll see that a lot.
And something I'm going to take issue with what you said, because I think that's part of what got us into this mess to begin with. When this first started to unravel, my dad, who's 76, said to me, oh, you know, because his father was very old. He said, you know, the Spanish flu around 1918, 1919, 1920, you know, I remember it was a big deal, and people in Chicago were worried because we were reading about it in St. Louis or something to that extent. And I just remember thinking, we're 100 years removed from that. I mean, I could be in Istanbul by the end of the day if I absolutely needed to be, you know, and sure, what I'm bringing with me, even if we're not in a pandemic, that I worry about is that artists, families, vacationers are going to be overzealous about where they think they can go because the risk is less.
Right. And
that's been the story of this year as a voyeur, just somebody who's staying inside all the time because newspapers, is that like Memorial Day, people in Missouri, the numbers were really low in middle America. So they went and did their thing on the rivers and at the lakes and at their bars and all this shit. I'm generalizing, obviously, but we know that's not the case. But then those numbers skyrocket. So I think that if I see, I'm going to be disappointed if I see that, because, and it's not just for musicians, it's for anybody, because I think that the best intention of what my dad was telling me with his story about what his father told him about the Spanish flu 100 years ago was that there was containment that was possible because people traveled a certain way and it wasn't that much of a disruption.
Right.
But now everything is a disruption because we can get to places so much easier. Our cars go so much faster. Our cars are built to drive a lot longer.
But isn't that the thing, is that, like, you know, we've come so far in technology, you don't have to fucking go anywhere.
Exactly. Like,
there is so much available to you now because of where we are. You literally could stay home and do a million things and be fine, but that's not enough.
Thank you, Sal, for coming back on the Berman Hour. Thank you to our sponsors, New Wave, who are bringing us Flow State Coffee. Go to noowave.co/berman and get 10% off your first order of New Wave coffee. And thank you for tuning in. Please subscribe, rate, review. It all helps. We'll see you next week. Everyone stay healthy.